Okay, we try to continue. Reading the Karika begins at the end of the first line of a verse, Lakshana Punaha. Lakshana is, again, Lakshana is as follows. And here's a definition of Lakshana. What's Lakshana supposed to be, basically? What do we mean by Lakshana? Figurative usage. Okay, yeah. That's an example. Mukhyarta badhe shakyasya sambandeyanya dir bhaved. Okay. Subject of this is anya dir. Verb is bhaved. Which other idea comes into being, or there is, mukhyarta badhe sati, when there is blockage of the primary meaning. In other words, a context in which the primary meaning doesn't make sense is impossible. Just like if we say, the villager is a bull. If we say the villager is a bull, we don't mean it literally. The literal meaning couldn't be what we mean. So we must have a figurative meaning. Mukhyarta badhe, when there is blockage of the principal meaning. That's a locative absolute. Shakyasya sambandhe. This is a regular adhikaranam. In a connection. Shakyasya, a connection with the Shakya. What's Shakya? Well, it's not a noun. Although there's the race called the Shakyas, and Gautama Buddha is one of the Shakyas. No, but this is not a proper name. Okay, we're guessing. What does it literally mean? Oh, possible. Okay, an adjective. Yes, ma'am? What potency? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the whole word. I couldn't hear. It's a potential participle of shuk. What is shuk? Shaknoti. To be able. So, able to be able. Whatever. Possible. Able-able. But here it has a technical meaning. Shakya is actually another way of calling the literal meaning. Because the literal meaning has shakti, it has the original energy of the word, the energy of being able to designate things. The shakti really belongs, the shakti conveys the literal meaning. So that's called shakya, that which is expressed by literal meaning, whereby the original shakti is called the shakya meaning, or the mukhyarta, same thing. So in connection with the literal meaning, like something that's physically in contact with it, something that shares qualities with the original idea, something in some way connected to the original idea, in a connection with the original idea, that other idea. In connection with the literal meaning, another idea. That's called lakshana. Okay, but there should be some connection of some sort. Okay? You don't just, imagine arbitrary meanings and call them figurative. They're just whimsical. That is the Humpty Dumpty school of etymology or of word meaning. If you've read, you have not read about Humpty Dumpty. Shaltai Baltai. сидел на стене. Okay, anyway, he's in Alice in Wonderland, and he made a proclamation that the words mean whatever I want them to mean. That's his school of grammar and of poetics and everything. But, you know, that's not fair. You don't just arbitrarily, whimsically make up meanings, but there should be some connection. Figurative meanings should have some kind of real connection with the literal meaning. Okay. It's a different idea, but it's connected somehow to the literal idea. And you're not justified to resort to it unless and until the literal meaning is blocked in the context. Okay, for example, suppose a reliable person talks about Gangayam Goshaha, the Gosha on the Ganga. Well, we have a problem with the literal meaning. Someone can easily figure it out that if Gosha means cowherd village, you can't have a cowherd village right on top of the river. It'll fall into the water. You know, people can't live there. So something else must be going on. One idea is that we can take an alternative meaning of Gosha. Gosha also means a rich man. Okay, so there's a rich man on the Ganga. That means he lives next to the Ganga. That might be the figurative meaning. Or we can, that's taking Gosha in a sort of extended sense. It's not the normal sense. Well, it's actually another meaning of Gosha, is a rich man. But still, rich men also don't usually, they may swim on top of the river for a while, but they don't live like that, floating on top of the river. They can't, even poor men can't float forever. So it must be he's living on the shore near the river. That's the figurative idea. And you could also talk about a cowherd village on the shore, which is connected to the river. Either way, both of them are bona fide lakshana expressions, figurative ways of saying it. You can interpret it either way. In that case, he explains this a different way about the village on the Ganga. He's actually taking the village to be figurative, the idea of the village. And what we're referring to actually is the reflection of the village that is on top of the water. That's one way of seeing it. There's different ways to squeeze out a figurative meaning. Now, there are two kinds of lakshana vritti that are actually going to be defined later on. Rudi lakshana and prayojana lakshana. Prayojana lakshana is a lakshana that serves the purpose of actually moving further ahead and expressing some dwani, suggesting another idea, a third idea. That's the prayojana, usually, of some lakshanas. Some lakshanas lead to a suggestion. So they're called prayojanavati, or purposeful lakshanas. And then there are other lakshanas that are just rudha. They're just conventional. We just use them all the time because that's a convention. And it doesn't lead to any particular special idea. It's just a conventional usage. Like shatpada. Shatpada literally means six, something having 6 feet as a bahuvrihi compound. But the conventional usage is only referring to bees, not to other insects. So that can be considered a rudhi lakshana. Nothing special that we're suggesting about bees. Every time we call the bees shatpada, and the word is used thousands and millions of times by poets. But there's no special suggestion just by using the word shatpada. It's just conventional. So that's a rudi lakshana that doesn't serve any special suggestive purpose. Yes. The rich man, the Gosha in the sense of the rich man, lives there. That's where he dwells.
Oh, it refers to the Tanya.
Yeah. But he doesn't dwell on top of the river, he dwells on the shore. Okay, but these two examples are the examples of the at least three different ways of explaining Gangayam Gosha. They're all examples of Prayojanavati Lakshana. Because there is a suggestion made. When you say that the cowherd village is on the Ganga, you're implying that that's a sanctified cowherd village, and it's cool there because there are breezes and water vapor. All that's implied. Special kind of cowherd village. And the Ganga is so sacred, so a cowherd village on the Ganga is automatically suggested to be a sacred cowherd village. Not said, but suggested. So that's Prayojanavati Lakshana. Because something without being said is suggested by Dwani. You could have said instead, you know, the cowherd village at such and such coordinates. Give the exact latitude and longitude. And that would also define the cowherd, same cowherd village, but it wouldn't express that suggestion of the sanctity and the coolness. Or if it's the word Gosha that we're taking to mean not the village but the reflection of the village, then also we have a suggestion. Yeah, if the village, he says here, in that case, that cowherd village that we're talking actually about the reflection of, still, that implies that the cowherd village must be very close to the shore, and therefore, extremely close to the shore, therefore it must share the sacredness and the coolness of the land next to the Ganga. Even though we're talking about the reflection on top of the Ganga. The village itself is not on top of the Ganga. That's another way of reading the Dwani. It also further implies or suggests that the water of the Ganga is very transparent. If it was muddy and not transparent, you wouldn't see the reflection on top of it of the whole village. So it's saying something nice about the Ganga by suggestion. So, actually, we get more poetic benefit from taking it as a lakshana vritti, a lakshana, rather, prayojanavati lakshana, that the lakshana really has its value in leading to the dwani, the suggestions. But if after saying there's a Gosha on the Ganga, and then you say next, please bring him here, then it can't mean village. It must mean a rich man. Still, well, then the word Gosha is not figurative. The dictionary lists rich man as a literal meaning of Gosha. It has more than one literal meaning. Cowherd village. It also means a sound, an inarticulate sound. It also means a rich man. I think it also means a cowherd. Some of Lord Chaitanya's devotees from North Bengal were called Gosha. I think more because they were cowherds than their family were cowherds rather than they were rich men. I don't know, is that true? You know any of these Goshas from Chaitanya Charitamrita? What kind of families did they come from? I think Brahmin families. Anyway, they were called Gosha. Let me study that. If the statement is construed, Gosha dwells there. Nanyad abadath. Well, that means there is not the absence of blockage of something else. But therefore, there is not lakshana. Rather, there's just the word Ganga. Well, the word rich man is not figurative, but we just said in the previous sentence that in that case, the word Gosha would be figurative. I'm sorry, no, the word Ganga would be figurative, because a rich man also doesn't live on top of the water. Okay, but I don't think that's being considered. So what noble? What is this sentence talking about then? Okay. I see. See, there can be lakshana that applies to a whole sentence or to a single word. A single word in the sentence can be figurative, or the whole idea of the sentence can be figurative. So we're making that distinction here. That the lakshana, it's not that there's no lakshana. There is a lakshana because there is blockage of literal meaning when you say the man lives on the Ganga, bring him here, the rich man. Because we're not talking about yachts, you know, he's probably living on the shore. So there is blockage. But in that case, it's not the whole sentence. That's what I'm reading here. The whole sentence isn't figurative, just the word Ganga. So we do distinguish between we distinguish scopes of lakshana, whether they apply to single words or to whole sentences, or even sometimes parts of words, even prefixes and suffixes can have special lakshana meanings, even separate letters sometimes. And sometimes a whole prakaranam, a whole mahavakya of many sentences can have a figurative meaning. Just like you tell a story about King Ram in the ancient past, but you're really talking about somebody else. You know, you want to glorify the present king, and you publish a poem about Ram, but it's understood you're actually glorifying the present king. That's the whole story is figurative. It's an allegory. So the scope of lakshana can vary. It's not only just single words. It's sometimes the whole sentence, sometimes part of a word, and sometimes a whole story. Now, another division of lakshanas is those that are jahat swartha, that give up their literal meaning, that lose their literal meaning when becoming figurative. And there are other figurative ideas that keep the literal meaning still, ajahat swartha. And then there's a strange category called jahat ajahat swartha, figurative usage that partially gives up the literal meaning and partially doesn't. And we'll have to dig up an example of that. Well, one example is tatvamasi. You are that. The living entity is partially equal to the absolute truth, and we have to understand him as partially different than the absolute truth. So that statement can be taken literal. I'm sorry, no. The literal meaning carries through to a restricted extent. Because you are, in some restricted sense, non-different. You are the absolute truth in some restricted sense. But otherwise, outside that restricted sense, you have to understand the statement, you are the absolute truth, figuratively. So it both, it partially, the, you know, in relation to the word tvam, it doesn't give up the word. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't get that right. But anyway, in part of its reference has to give up its literal meaning and part of it doesn't. Let's go back to an example of Jatswarta. And that's the example of Gosha on the Ganga. The idea of being on the Ganga, or of being the actual village and not the reflection of the village, that has to be given up. You can't keep it and also have your metaphor, your figurative usage. So it's Jahatswarta. But still, because even this other meaning has a direct connection with the literal meaning of being on top of the Ganga, therefore there is an invariable connection. It, you know, cannot be ignored. And therefore it's a valid lakshana. Yes? Well, you know, it's Jatswarta lakshana. When you say there's a gosha on the, let's say there's a cowherd village on the Ganga, because there is not a cowherd village literally on the Ganga. That idea has to be thrown away. It can't be kept also with the addition of the metaphorical usage. No, it has to be purely metaphorical, literal meaning thrown out. That's Jatswarta. Still, there's an invariable connection between the figurative meaning and the literal meaning. There's a connection between the Ganga and the shore next to the Ganga, or there's a connection between the village and its reflection. That's the connection. So that inflection. Yeah. To the secondary meaning, the figurative meaning. There's a connection between the literal meaning and the figurative meaning, and you can't pull the two apart completely. Even though it's swarta, jahat swarta, even though the literal meaning is not being expressed, still there's a connection. Without a connection, it's not really lakshana. Okay. Now, suppose you said this, kunta pravishanti, the spears enter. It's a stage direction.
It's a spear?
Spears. Things you stick people with, yeah. Spears, the spears enter. It's, you know, it's part of the play. Now all the spears enter. Well, wait a minute, spears are going to walk on the stage by themselves? No, you say that, but that's figurative. It must include the people who carry the spears. We don't have, you know, sorcerers' spears that walk around by themselves here. But it's just a figurative way of saying it, the spears enter. It means the people with the spears. But it doesn't exclude the spears. The people with the spears come, then the spears are also there. Spears are also entering. So that's ajahat swarta. See the difference? Literal meaning can't stand by itself. You know, it can't be that spears are walking on stage. But if people carry them, then they come on stage. Yes? See, the word pravish, if you look at, you know, the strict definition of it, pravish and gum, the verbs of motion are supposed to be actions performed by, rather intentional actions performed by conscious beings. Even just movement, gamanam. So you have to be figurative to talk about something inanimate moving. Bart, remember?
Wish should be intentional, but otherwise, the spears enter could just mean that people, the stage is there, And then there are some
spears enter.
Yeah, and then like there could be characters who are like people who are just standing behind the screen and throwing spears and so on.
Spears. Yeah, but that's not the idea that someone's throwing spears on the stage. No, I mean the army's coming. You know, that's the audience will run away if they start throwing spears around.
No, but it's
not the idea. The idea is that the army, walks on, the soldiers walk on carrying their spears. That's the intended idea. The what enters?
The knife enters.
Well, see, there's two theories about whether there's a different theory about whether action movements have to be done by intentionally by conscious beings. There's another school that say no, inanimate things can also move. Yeah, so those are two different theories. Knives can actually cut, even though they had to have people making them cut. Not always. A knife can fall, off the table and cut your foot all by itself, even though there's no intention there. But, it's your fault you left the knife on the table. Yes? Because the literal meaning can't be included. You can't have the village on the shore and also think that it's on top of the river. So being on top of the river has to be thrown out, that idea. Or if it's... that's basically it. That's Jihad Svarta. A Jihad Svarta is the spears enter. Okay? Can't be understood without making it figurative, but the spears are entering, being carried by the people. And if you want to throw the spears at the audience, not going to have much audience for your play. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
There was one lucid example. I don't know whether it was in the Sandarbhas or where the Shweta Dhavati, we had an example. The white one runs,
yeah. But the word Shweta refers to the color.
Yeah.
So now you got the color running.
Yeah.
But it really means the horse.
Yes.
But a horse is an animate thing with it intentionally runs. That's no problem, but you have to figuratively identify the white as the horse who is white. Because Shweta is a word describing a quality, a color. But figuratively it means a white horse. And you can understand, by convention, it's a white horse, not a white hippopotamus. It's just not used like that. The Shweta Dhavati. A hippopotamus is running down the street? No, you understand it to mean a horse, by convention. So it's Rudi Lakshana. There's no suggestion made by just saying the Shweta Dhavati. It's just Rudi Lakshana. No, it's Ajahat. Because the white color is also moving along with the horse. The white is in the horse. So when the horse moves, the white moves. The white color also moves. It's also running down the street. So it's Ajahat Svarta. Doesn't throw away the literal meaning. But you have to understand it figuratively. It can't just be white, unless you're hallucinating, it can't just be white color running down the street. Okay, now we got this, what do we do with, let's read on here. Look at this, he gives an example, Shono Davati, the red one runs. Okay, that must be a red horse. He says, not Lakshana. It's not Lakshana, he says. Kavi Karnapur, his opinion is not considered Lakshana because according to Patanjali's Vartika, Patanjali's Mahabhashya on Ashtajayi, Kwachit Guna Vachanan Matupo Lo Lugishta. Lug is a kind of, is one of the categories of deletion, deleting. So sometimes when there is an expression of a color, the word, the suffix matup, the deletion of the original suffix matup is implied or is intended. So when you say shono davati, that's like an abbreviated way of saying shonavan davati. The thing with red color is running. Now, you have to know conventionally that it's not a red hippopotamus, that by convention it's a red horse, but that's not a question of lakshana. The literal meaning of shonavan means entity with red color. And that entity is running. And that's the literal meaning, it's not blocked. So it's not lakshana, according to that theory. But that's Kavi Karnapur's opinion. And he's quoting Patanjali, the first commentator on Panini, as authority. Well, if it's a male horse, it'd be shonavan. But matup can be put in masculine. Oh, I don't know. See, matup, I think, well, for nouns ending in a short, it should change to vat. Yeah, so it's shonavan. Did I say shonavan? That's right. Yeah, there's a rule that matup becomes vat, vatu, after nouns ending in a short, at least masculine ones. I'm sorry? Well, it just says that sometimes that's what's intended. Sometimes. In expressions of qualities. Therefore, we don't have to say that using the, talking about the quality is figurative. We can say that it actually was talking about the thing that has a quality, but the matup disappeared. Yes. Yeah, but many names describe qualities. I don't know. I don't know if that analysis is made in the case of proper names. Proper names are mostly just conventional anyway. But gori, the e is an in suffix actually. And you know, it's a derogatory word. It means a pale face. Pale face talks with forked tongue. Okay. Chatrino. Okay, now here's an example. Chatrino gachanti. Now here's a suffix in. The people with umbrellas are going or moving. Well, in that case, you have a whole crowd. There's a lakshana expressing a whole crowd, and not everybody in the crowd is carrying an umbrella. You know, when we, especially, this is not New York City in the rain. This is Vedic culture where only kings, you know, get white umbrellas. You usually don't have everybody in the crowd holding an umbrella. You don't even see that in Udupi in the rainy season. Everybody carrying an umbrella, they just wear raincoats. So we're talking about a whole crowd, and that's figurative, because not everybody has an umbrella in that crowd. But we say figuratively that people with umbrellas are moving. Yeah, they're moving, and also some other people with them. That's figurative. And it's ajahat swarta, because people with umbrellas are also part of the crowd. Literal meaning is also there. But it wouldn't be culturally sensible to talk about, you know, 1,000 people all carrying umbrellas. Maybe in London, but not in India. Now, you got the phrase rato gacha, it's a sentence, rato gachati. The chariot moves. Am I out of time? No. The chariot moves. Well, here we have an example of jahat ajahat svarta. The literal meaning has to be rejected partly, and it can be kept partly. How does that work? Okay, partly it must give up the literal meaning because the chariot, this is not an automobile, this is a chariot drawn by horses or by bullock. Let's say horses. It doesn't move. It doesn't pull itself. It's not an automobile. So, therefore, there is a lack of proper connection. Well, the literal meaning is missing. Can't be there. In part, gamana means to move by your own energy. And chariots don't do that, not ancient chariots. Sva kartrika gamana abhavad. By the fact of the absence of movement all by itself, therefore amshato, partly, it's jahat swarta. It has to give up its literal meaning when you say the chariot is moving. But gamana amshena, when you just take a more general idea of moving from one place to the other, if you allow, that's also a meaning of gamana, then it doesn't have to give up. It is moving, but it's not moving by its own energy. So that should be considered partly rejecting its literal meaning, and in the other aspect of it, of the meaning of gamana, it doesn't give up its literal meaning. Gamana can both mean moving intentionally, moving by one's own power, and it can also mean just moving from one place to another. So the word carries both meanings. So you have to just accept it as both rejecting and partly not rejecting the literal meaning. That's what Kavi Karnapur says. I guess a little complicated. Yes?
Doesn't it imply that we have to reinterpret the meaning of the verb here to switch between the two? Because if you take gachhati as moving by its own force, then it becomes jahat svarta. But if we imply gachhati just movement, regardless of whether by its own force or not, then it becomes ajahat svarta.
Well, but why we're saying that it's both is that the word gachati, when you say it, normally expresses both ideas, both of intentional movement and just changing from one place to another. Both ideas are at the same time expressed by the same word. Verbs can be complex. When you say cook, you're actually talking about several actions. Throwing rice in the pot, adding water, turning on the, putting firewood, igniting the fire, stirring the rice, letting it sit for half an hour. These are all different actions, but they're all connected. They're all part of the overall meaning of cook, at least cooked rice. So the meaning of a verb can be complex. It can have more than one part. And so here we're analyzing, Kavi Karnapur is analyzing the verb gum to have both of these parts. And according to one part, it has to give up its literal meaning. And according to the other part of just changing location from one place to another, it doesn't have to give up its literal meaning.
So in other words, the meaning of the word...
The verb gum
is like the movement is broader, and then that movement could be done either by its own on its own accord or by some other force. That's kind of more narrow.
But we're not talking specific. About that. In this analysis, we're not talking about something else making it move. We're just saying movement is, supposed to mean intentional movement, but it also involves moving from changing from one place to another. And so, the chariot is changing from one place to another. It fits that part of the definition, but it doesn't fit the part that the action's intentional. So it has to become partly Jahat-svarta. It has to give up its literal meaning partly, and it has to be understood figuratively.
Now let me take a second to read this sentence and get it right.
Okay, see, there are two different opinions. One is that movement is an action that has to be an intentional effort. And so therefore, such movement cannot literally reside in unconscious beings. But there's another theory, another school that says that the meaning of the verb gum is principally the actions, the whole collection of actions that are favorable to the result of changing location. You know, whatever. Having someone kick you in the back may be favorable to you moving to a different location. Or turning the ignition of your car may be favorable to it. It depends on the circumstance. But according to the second school, the second theory, the meaning of gum is simply the collection of activities, of intermediate activities. That's vyapara. Vyapara is an intermediate activity that leads to the result that's actually the definition of the activity indicated by the verb. Just like all the things you have to do to cook rice are intermediate activities in cooking rice. The person who's going to eat the rice doesn't have to care about it. The person who's going to cook the rice has to know the intermediate activities. So if you take the second theory about movement, then both animate and inanimate things can do intermediate activities that lead, or at least are favorable, to the result of relocation. Even inanimate thing. And then if you follow that theory, you don't have to analyze it as lakshana, saying that the chariot is moving. Depends on which theory, which school you ascribe to. Then it's just a literal meaning, mukhya, according to the second school. Okay, now last example. Mancha kroshanti. The bleachers, do you know what bleachers are? In a soccer stadium, the rich people have nice seats, and the others just sit on flat, on benches or on stone. That's the bleachers, the cheap seats. So actually, this is, what did you say it was? The word bench, it's sitting places in an arena. The word is used in the description of Kamsa's arena, mancha, that everyone took their seats on the manchas. But here it says the manchas are shouting. The sitting places are shouting. Well, the literal meaning is saying that the seats are shouting, but I don't think that's that can't be happening. Seats can make noise, but they don't make articulate noise. They don't shout. They don't complain. So you must actually mean that there's some people on the seats, and they're the ones who are shouting. But you can say figuratively, the seats are shouting. So there's some connection there between the literal meaning of the seats and the people who are connected to the seats by having their backsides parked on the seats. Okay, that's a connection. That's a simple samyoga, physical contact. They don't own the seats. In fact, even if they wanted to steal them, they're just wooden plank, just cement all around the stadium. They can't take them home with them. Okay, so they don't belong to the people, but they are temporarily connected to them by sitting on them. But there is that connection. And it has to be understood, therefore, it's a simple connection. It has to be understood as jahar svarta. the literal meaning of the seats shouting, that can't be, that's not part of it, even a little part of it. The seats are not shouting, the people are. But this is not Prayojanavati. It doesn't suggest anything poetic. And neither is it Ruddhi Lakshana. It's not something conventional. It's a strange thing, as someone might say, but it's not an established convention to say the seats are shouting. So it's considered, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti in his commentary, it's Nirartika. It doesn't serve any special purpose. Prayojana, what we mean by Prayojana is the Prayojana, the fruit, is supposed to be some suggestion, dwani. What's suggested? Can you think of a suggestion? Yeah, but why don't you just say everybody shouts? What poetic purpose are you accomplishing by saying the seats shout? There's nothing special. I don't think there's, anyway, Kavi Karnapur says that there's nothing special suggested by that. Yeah. Okay, you want to take the benches to mean the common people. Okay, but Kavi Karnapur said it doesn't have any suggestion. Yeah. Yes. Well, we'll have to learn about suggestions. There's, at the end of this chapter, suggestion is defined. And the whole third chapter is a detailed analysis of all kinds of suggestion. We distinguish the different sources of suggestion, what leads to a suggestion. And there are some rules about that. There's some restrictions about what can lead to a proper suggestion. But it's complicated. There are different kinds of suggestion, and different kinds of suggestions each have their own restrictions, own rules. I don't think it's a general rule. What was it, that there has to be a close enough connection? I don't know. I don't remember hearing that. Connection is, sambandha is important in the definition of lakshana. We'll see if the word sambandha comes up or the idea comes up in the definition of vyanjana later. I don't remember. But I don't think it's there. Yes. Well, that's the responsibility of the poet to make his suggestions understandable to his audience. He may have a special audience. He may be targeting connoisseurs, and then ordinary people won't understand his poetry. But he's got to have some audience, and he's got to be clear to his audience. If he has wonderful ideas, but his audience can't catch them, or it takes them forever to figure them out, then that's not good poetry. It degrades poetry to a lower status. Madhyama poetry becomes avara, inferior. Because it's a fault if the vyanjanas are aspashta, if they're not clear enough. And that means not readily understandable by the intended audience. Yeah, well, it's trick poetry. He's just playing games with words. I think he's not caring whether anybody understands everything he says. So it's not great poetry. Therefore, it's clever, but it's not great poetry. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Sri Mad Alankar Kostabha Ki Jai. That's Srimad in Samasa. That's why it ends in a T.
Okay. Hare Krishna.